Yesterday, I was talking to Aaron Barnhart, our TV guy, who has written a piece about the threats to public broadcasting and its government funding. And in that discussion, he mentioned Frontline, the terrific documentary series that's been airing on PBS for years and years and years, and comes to a conclusion tonight. Tonight's Frontline is called Private Warriors. It is about the private contractors who are there in Iraq en masse, something like 100,000 civilian contractors, something like 20,000 private security forces working in Iraq. Martin Smith reports the piece that was produced by Marcella Gaviria, and she joins me now here on KMOX. Hello, Marcella.
Paul, how are you? Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, and congratulations on what I hear is a terrific piece. I've only read about it, but I'm looking forward to seeing it tonight. Tell me, how often have you actually been to Iraq to report this story?
Well, this is my fourth trip to Iraq. I had spent quite a bit of time there after the war and in 2003 or early 2004. But things have really changed over there, so we had sort of stopped traveling like so many journalists and finally found a story that we thought we could accomplish and do, and got incredible access to a side of the war that few people have really ever seen. One of them being the sort of first embed, as they call it, with KBR, which is the subsidiary of Halliburton, and the other one being spending a lot of time with private security contractors on the ground, all those bodyguards running up and down the streets of Baghdad, and I don't think a single television crew had ever done that either.
I'm looking forward to seeing that, but I mentioned that you have that we have over 100,000 of these private forces there, both security and civilian contractors who are there. That's not you know, that's about as many as we have in uniform of the United States Army and Marines and Air Force and all the rest who are serving in Iraq these days. So we're talking equal numbers and a huge number. And my first question has to be, who do these people answer to?
Well, that's probably the best question you could ask. And that's the question we had in mind. And what you start finding is that there's great confusion. If you ask that question to a contractor, they'll say, we're accountable to the coalition. But if anything goes wrong on the ground, you know, what's the number you dial? What commander calls up the contractor to say, don't go down that road, it's dangerous? What happens if something goes really bad? You know, who's rescued? What were the backup? You know, and if anything happens to Iraqis, they don't have any place to go to get any answers.
Now, when you talk about who do you call when there's trouble, all I can think about is the trouble in Fallujah last year, which became a very famous story of four private contractors who were caught up in something that went horribly wrong and burned and hung in effigy in Fallujah. Did you guys dig into that part of the story?
We did. It was actually the first story we started looking into, and we thought we would do a full hour on those four guys because it's a really fascinating story about four men and how they got there. And it turns out that the story we uncovered was about seven layers deep of contracts, everybody skimming on the contract, to the point that the day those guys rode into Fallujah, they had no armored cars, not the right guns, not enough guys inside the car, and nobody's accountable for what happened because they're, you know, nobody will answer questions to the families. And I think that's why we wanted to make this story. I mean, you know, there are also families that have been through a hell of a lot, and no one will tell them what happened that day.
So no one knows what those guys were doing there in the first place?
Nobody. They were working for a private security company called Blackwater, which was protecting a food convoy called ESS. That company was subcontracted to another company called Regency, and that other company may or may not have been subcontracted to the 82nd Airborne, to KBR Halliburton. We don't know, and no company will tell us. And it matters because these families simply need closure. They want to know what went wrong and who's responsible, and they don't know who to accuse, really.
Now, when things like that go wrong, and we all heard the story and were shocked at what was done to these men, dragged out of their SUVs, burned, bodies pulled apart, two of them hung in effigy from that bridge in Fallujah, that's when the military actually had to go in and take on a mission they didn't really want to take on. Weren't Marines involved there that day?
That's right. It was called Operation Vigilant Resolve, and about 5 days after the bodies were returned, to the military, the Marines who had just arrived in theater in Fallujah, who had very different plans for what they wanted to do with the city. We interviewed the colonel that was in charge of Fallujah at the time and then in the Operation Vigilant Resolve. And he said, I had a different plan. My plan was to win the hearts and minds, and we were going to go at this differently. And 5 days into this, we suddenly had to go to war and declare these people our enemies. And 1 month into that operation, they were asked to pull out. So it was a big catastrophe, and we do go into that.
So these contractors who ended up dead, they were kind of off the reservation, if you will. Were they acting like cowboys?
No, I'm not sure that they were, but they were certainly very ill-prepared to be there. In April of 2004, I cannot think of a single Westerner that would have gone into Fallujah. Colonel Tulin himself said, I would have never sent my own men into the city without armored cars, with enough men to patrol, you know, and help out. So these guys, a few of them had only been in Iraq for 2 days, didn't know, you know, the difference between a stop sign or a, you know, don't turn sign, and they're suddenly lost in the middle of the city.
Were they lost or were they breaking the rules?
No, they were apparently lost, although, as I said, nobody really knows what happened that day. Blackwater's not explaining what was going on, what their mission was, why they sent them in there, whether they were supposed to go a different route. You know, all these basic questions aren't being answered.
When we talk about the military having to provide protection for these guys and have to take action after what happened in Fallujah, that's not the first time. It's going on with several other contractors and other situations. But we also have contractors who were in there, private contractors who were brought in, and security forces whose job it is to protect the U.S. Army. Isn't the Corps of Engineers getting protection from non-military personnel?
That's actually one of the most surprising things to me. That is, in fact, correct. The whole Army Corps of Engineers, that has lots and lots of civilians, but they do work for the Army Corps of Engineers, and they have protection from a South African British company called Aranis. General Petraeus, who is well known for training the Iraqi police, he gets protection from a private security company. And a few other generals from the Army as well. So that's pretty unusual in my book.
Unusual? Isn't it unprecedented that the military is being protected by civilians? Isn't it supposed to be the other way around?
I've never heard of anything like that. We did look into it. It's possible that there were a few instances in Vietnam, but it's really different right now because it's standard operating procedure. And in fact, the reason it's happening is because We don't want to have a big military footprint, so we might as well pay for it.
It sounds to me like we're subcontracting the war.
That's the perfect way of putting it. We've outsourced the war. There's no downsizing. I think that's really a misconception because, you know, we had to hire 110,000 people to do the job that the military would have done back in Vietnam or any World War II or whatever.
So it's not just support services we're talking about here. It's not, hey, we'll bring in a private company and they'll run the mess hall.
And even that is pretty interesting because the question that we pose in this film is this necessary in this stage of trying to settle down a country? We understand we could have bases like this in Germany or bases anywhere in the world. I mean, the soldiers need whatever they want. But when you're in a war zone, you have people trucking up and down the roads, you know, ice cream, fancy gym equipment, television sets, you name it. And a lot of people are putting their life on the line to get that luxury up the road.
I got to ask you this. Did you have a private security force of your own? Did you hire some of these private contractors to protect you and your staff and film crews while you were in Iraq?
No, we didn't. In fact, we've never done it. It's always a choice that every journalist faces. How do you get around Iraq safely? For the most part, our team, and we've been together in Iraq quite a few times, we've always decided that the best way is to do it under the radar. Get a really low-profile taxi, try to have several cars, try to dress like the locals. You don't always succeed, but if you're, you know, driving at 40 miles an hour, you know, maybe somebody won't notice. Other people think that's just, you know, ludicrous and that we're really risking our lives. But you have to learn how to assess your own situation and what you feel comfortable with. This time, we rode around with these guys because we were filming. and we wanted access to private security companies, and we filmed with a total of 3 companies. And before we had left, we had pretty much scoured all the archives of the world to see how much footage existed. And it was about 1 minute's worth of footage. So we had to figure out how to make a film with 1 minute, you know. And we went over there and got access, and I think that's why everybody should tune in. It's a very unusual look at private security work in Iraq. It's very interesting and very tense.
It's the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX, talking with Marcela Gaviria, producer of tonight's Frontline episode. It's called Private Warriors. It'll be on Channel 9 at 9 o'clock tonight here in St. Louis. Halliburton and its subsidiaries have gotten something like $12 billion worth of business in all of this private contracting out to corporations, this subcontracting or outsourcing of the war. Is it cost efficient?
Well, that's a really hard question to tackle, and I don't think anyone ever gave us an answer. What is pretty clear is that it doesn't matter what it costs. People are ordering everything all the time, and this is sort of an unusual fact, but in the amount of subcontracting that we are doing now in the U.S., it's unprecedented. Nothing like this has ever happened in history. And yet you only have 8 procurement officers in the Pentagon looking over this. So you have billions and billions of dollars being spent and only 8 people sort of keeping tabs on this.
And some of it's obviously getting lost, because I hear of billions of dollars that is not being kept an eye on very closely, and they can't find where it went.
Well, that's the main problem or accusation that has been made of KBR, is basically not that there's been fraud, but that there's been bad accounting. KBR themselves is very clear in saying we had a paperwork issue. That's the way they describe the problems they've had. And, you know, in some cases, it's amounted to billions of dollars worth of paperwork issues.
There was a report given to Congress yesterday by the Inspector General of the Marine Corps saying that Marine Corps units who are fighting in some of the most dangerous terrain in Iraq don't have enough weapons, don't have enough communications gear, don't have properly outfitted vehicles, and the 30,000 or so Marines in Iraq need twice as many things like heavy machine guns and fully protected armored vehicles and all the rest, and they're not getting it. Are the private contractors getting what they want? Because you said a moment ago, they ask for it, they get it. Do they have the supplies that they need?
Well, I'm not sure if I can answer that question. I think that you do see an improvement on the ground with the kind of things that the military has. You see a lot more up-armored Humvees running around. Progress is being made, and you hear less complaints. On the other hand, you know, these contractors, you have to ask the question, if these Marines are not getting what they're asking for, why are we spending it on all these other things? Mm. We have permanent bases in Iraq. They are enduring bases. These places have, 38,000 people living in them, in not luxury, but they get 4, you know, meals a day at basically dining facilities that look like all-you-can-eat gourmet food. I mean, anything you want, you can get it.
Wow, right in the middle of Iraq.
Right in the middle of Iraq. If you tune in, you'll see, you know, bases that have little bus routes, Olympic-sized swimming pools, salsa lessons every night. I'm not saying that soldiers don't deserve that, because...
Well, hold on a second. I'm not sure that soldiers deserve salsa lessons every night.
Well, if it's going to help them fight, I'm all for it. But the question is, does that make you just not want to fight? I mean, when I go to a five-star hotel in any city, do I want to work the next day or do I want to sleep in a bit? You know, these are just the questions that I'm thinking when I'm out there looking at all of this.
How much do these private security forces make compared to a member of the United States military?
Okay, this is a little bit more complicated, but it's about twice as much, and it can be up to 8 times as much. Less. Soldiers make 8 times less.
Could these people be called mercenaries?
Some people see them that way. There's definitely people out there that you know, see them that way. Africans that we filmed, they're considered mercenaries by South Africa.
How do the members of the United States military that you ran into feel about these private contractors and the security forces?
I think there's a lot of resentment. you sense a lot of people saying, listen, there's no chain of command here. They can go in wherever they want. They're not accountable to anybody. We don't know if they're coming into our area, and it's a problem.
And how do Iraqis feel about them?
Well, I would say reviled.
That's what we saw in Fallujah last year.
Yeah, and you know, it's pretty understandable, because if you're trying to make it to work or to the hospital to visit, you know, some relative that's just been hit, and, you know, you see a convoy that basically runs you off the road, and it happens day after day after day, you know, it really pisses you off after a while.
When you go into a project like this, do you have an agenda?
No, honestly, we often are very lost in the process of making a film, where we're asking a lot of questions, not finding the right answers, not quite knowing if we're asking the right question. And it's a process. You sort of build on the questions that you start, people start asking of you. When we went in, the families that we interviewed of those four Blackwater guys that died in Fallujah said, we want to know what happened that day. Well, that was a quest that we went out to answer. So often the people that we meet along the way help us to find the questions that we ask.
The show is called Private Warriors. It is the final episode of Frontline for this season. Marcella Gaviria and Martin Smith put it together. It'll be on Channel 9 at 9 o'clock tonight. I'm looking forward to seeing it, having talked to you and read a little bit about it. I think this is a part of the war story that has not been told, and I'm glad you guys went there to tell it. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to it.
Marcella Gaviria here on the Paul Harris Show.